enjoy your nap.
So, my name is Justin Moran, and I am your friend. That being the case, if you're here for this class, then you can move up to one of the closer rows, and I don't mind, I can't guarantee that for everybody else here on the front rows, but... So, today has been an amazing conference, today and yesterday, and I would just like to say thank you to everybody who has participated in it, and for all the teaching, and all the people that have come to be inspired by it. Who's enjoyed the conference so far?
Good, good, that's great.
So, with the conference, how it's gone so far, who is feeling energized and excited, renewed, ready to go out and continue to do better, continue homeschooling? We had like three dance. Oh boy, okay, we got an enthusiastic person. Who feels like they've been drinking from a fire hose? It's just kind of been a lot, and they're ready to just take a day off. It's a good thing tomorrow's Sunday. Who feels a little bit overwhelmed? Like, what everything that you have been coming in contact with is, there's a lot to learn and there is a lot to do. Who feels like they're a failure? Come to the conference and you feel like, oh, this is probably what this is supposed to look like. I'm not doing that. I'm not very good at this. I don't know that I should be doing this. Well, I want to encourage you that you being here and you participating and you learning everything that you can is not only helping you and preparing you, but you will be able to help a lot of people with what you learn. And it's okay to have some of those feelings. My purpose here today is to hopefully help encourage you and give you some ideas on how you can better educate about our country, our Constitution, and the way that our country was founded. So I'd like to talk about the hand of providence in the making of America. And so I'm going to tell a bunch of stories about some different experiences where we can look back at the history of this country and we can see where God has played a direct part in the making of this country. And I want to start with George Washington. George Washington took part in the French and Indian War under General Braddock. And General Washington, or George Washington, had previously served in different capacities, and when General Braddock came with 4,000 British troops to come and crush the French insurrection trying to take over the American colonies and limit their expansion here in America, he asked General George Washington if he would come and join him in his campaign. And George Washington, being an enthusiastic young man who had grand dreams of going to war and battle and proving himself and making a name for himself, was like, yes, I'm going to go do this. And as soon as his mother heard that he had been invited to go and help in this campaign, she was concerned for his safety and hurried to Mount Vernon to persuade him not to accept the invitation, but was unable to discourage him. In their conversation, he reminded her, "The God to whom you commended me, madam, when I set out upon a more perilous errand, defended me from all harm, and I trust he will do so now. Do not you? And he, shortly after that conversation with his mother, he left and went and joined that campaign against the French. And he played a pivotal role in that campaign. General Braddock, he had made a career out of being in the military. And he thought that all of the American bumpkins and their little militia was going to be a fun little addition to his 4,000 British troops that he had brought from England. And he thought that it would be a piece of cake to just march up there and just destroy the French in one easy battle, and it would be over, and it would be another badge that he could hang on his chest and a great accomplishment. But he had no idea about warfare in America, and specifically about the Indians. And so as they were headed up through the frontier, and there weren't any roads, and so they were trying to make roads and have all the baggage train and everything come along behind them to be able to support their army, they kept on getting slowed down and slowed down more and more. And so he split his force and he kind of went ahead with some of them. And then George Washington was like, let me take some of the locals, we'll be scouts and we'll go see if there's any ambushes. And he's like, we don't do ambushes. That's such a dishonorable thing to do. There's no way our enemies would do that. We're going to face each other on the field of battle and we're going to win. And he didn't listen to George Washington. And because of that, he led his entire army, which was spread out over 4 miles long along this road. And he led them straight into an ambush. And the British had no concept of how to defend themselves from an ambush like this, fighting with native French and Indian warriors. And so they were knocked off their feet, absolutely decimated their entire force. General Braddock rode back and forth trying to keep all of his men together. All of his aides were killed except for George Washington, who had actually been sick and like on his deathbed the week previous and was still not feeling well from being so sick. And George Washington was his only aide, and he ran his horse back and forth across the battlefield trying to give instructions to the different soldiers. And there was multiple people that he had 2 horses shot out from under him, and he had 4 bullet holes in his coat from people trying to shoot him, and none of them did. General Braddock's campaign ended in failure. He was shot, and he ended up dying in the retreat from that engagement, and he was buried in the middle of the road, and George Washington had the entire army march over his grave so that he could not be exhumed by the Indians and his body defiled. Years and years later, after the founding fathers had made the Constitution and George Washington was traveling a little bit, he went up to the northern states. And while he was up there, he was approached by a chief. And the chief said that he was there at the battle with General Braddock. He was a very important chief. He had the ability to command hundreds of warriors. And he had all of his best warriors that were around him in that battle. He told all of them, shoot that man. And he had Indians, warriors, that they never missed. One of them specifically said, after I shot 12 times at this man, I stopped shooting at him because I could not hit him. And this chief gave a prophecy, and he said, I am a chief and a ruler over many tribes. My influence extends to the waters of the Great Lakes and to the far Blue Mountains. I have traveled a long and weary path that I might see the young warrior of the great battle. It was on the day of the white man's blood mixed with the streams of our forest that I first beheld this chief Washington. I called him my young men and said, "Mark yon tall and daring warrior. He is not of the Red Coat tribe. He hath an Indian's wisdom, and his warriors fight as we do. Himself is alone exposed. Quick, let your aim be certain, and he dies." Our rifles were leveled, rifles which, but for you, knew not how to miss. 'Twas all in vain, a power mightier far than we shielded you. Seeing you were under the special guardianship of the Great Spirit, we immediately ceased to fire at you. I am old, and soon shall be gathered to the great council fire of my fathers in the land of shadows. But ere I go, there is something bids me speak in the voice of prophecy. Listen, the Great Spirit protects that man, pointing at Washington, and guides his destinies. He will become the chief of nations, and a people yet unborn will hail him as the founder of a mighty empire. I am come to pay homage to the man who is the particular favorite of heaven and who can never die in battle. God protected George Washington in a way that not many have ever been protected before, or many have ever seen, so that he could play a pivotal and key role in the founding of this country. Another story I want to share with you is about the weather. There's a place called Dorchester Heights, which is where a big part of the Revolutionary War really began. After Bunker Hill, George Washington amassed his army around New York City, and that's where the British came to get him. And they brought their entire force down there. And trying to prepare for the battle, there was a place called Dorchester Heights that had not been fortified, and it was a weak point in the Continental Army's position. And they went to try and fortify it, but when they were doing that, they would be vulnerable to the British bombardments from their cannon. And what happened is, the night that they went to go and fortify that position, a bank of fog rolled in, and a wind blew opposite from the direction of the British, so it blew all the sounds of their preparations away from the British. So the British never anticipated that they were fortifying that area. Another example of the weather is Fort Ticonderoga and Henry Knox. Who's heard the story of Henry Knox and the cannon of Fort Ticonderoga? So this is an incredible story, because George Washington did not have very many supplies as he was running the Continental Army. And to try and use everything that he had available to him, he knew that up at an abandoned fort there was a bunch of cannon. And he went to Henry Knox and he said, "I need you to go and get these cannon." And it's the middle of winter, and the roads are terrible. And it's an almost impossible task. But they need those cannon, and they need them now to be able to engage the British. And so Henry Knox says, "All right, I'll go and do this." And he took a company of men, and they marched up to Fort Knox. And they unloaded all the cannon out of the fort, and they got ready to bring them back. And overnight, they had several feet of snow that came in on the ground, and it leveled all of the roads. And there was a hard freeze that just made everything so they could put all the cannon on sleds, and they were able to transport them all back to Washington's army weeks sooner than they had anticipated. And it gave them the upper hand in many of the engagements that they had. Have any of you guys heard about John Glover? And who John Glover is? So John Clover, he was a fisherman, and he was a very influential fisherman. Many people knew about John Clover and the influence that he had in the town where he lived. And when the Revolutionary War came and George Washington made a call throughout the colonies for people to come and fight for the freedom of our country, John Clover responded, and he brought a bunch of his fishermen, and they showed up. And these men worked for John Clover, or they knew him, and they were disciplined. They had worked on shipping schooners and fishing schooners, and they had had to learn how to work together as a team so that they could be out on the high seas and not end up dying because of the perils of being out on the ocean. And they came and they, together as a group, they offered stability to the ragtag militia that Washington had in his army. And there are several examples of when John Clover and his men, who are called the Marblehead Fishermen, because they were from the town of Marblehead, when they played a critical role in helping to get General Washington out of the line. And one of those was in that after the Battle of New York, General Washington was he was all boxed in, and there was nowhere for his army to go. And the British generals saw it, they had it on all sides, and they were like, you know what? We're just gonna hold off for a day, and we're just gonna like let the Americans sit there and sweat, and we're gonna come in and we're gonna kill all tomorrow. And we're going to end this thing once and for all. We're just going to wipe them out, make them surrender. We'll have General Washington. It's going to be over. We'll just wait until tomorrow. We'll get a good night's rest, and we'll do it in the morning. General Washington went to John Clover, and he said, I need to get my entire army across the Delaware River tonight. And it was the middle of winter, and the river was clogged with ice and snow, and John said, well, okay, we will make it happen. And he and his Marblehead fishermen, they transported the entire army across the Delaware River overnight while keeping up fires along the bank in the encampment that they were in to make the British think that they were still there. And when the British stormed their camp in the morning, there was no one left because of the efforts of John Clover. Another time that we can see the hand of providence in American history is there was in New York, before the British landed in the first engagement there, there was an assassination attempt on George Washington's life. There was a bunch of the loyalists in New York that wanted to not go to war with England. And there was one of them who's actually an aide to George Washington. And he helped smuggle a keg of gunpowder, a large keg, into the basement of George Washington's command house. And they were planning on blowing it up with George Washington in there and killing him. And through some forged documents, they were able to discover the plot and they were able to stop it. Through the hand of Providence helping them to be able to find that information. So, I have several microphones that we are going to, I'm going to get some participation from everybody. Okay. four children. My oldest is 8, my youngest is 2. And my homeschooling journey, I was homeschooled as a kid, but my journey right now in trying to do it with my family is just started. And so I would like to ask some of you, why do you think it's important that we teach these things about the Constitution, about the hand of providence to our children?
The reason is it beats my heart so much, there is history. It's because without knowing past history, we're going to repeat history and all that, and the evil. And when we know this history, we will preserve life, freedom, family, faith, and everything that they fought, stood for, and sacrificed. And once you get hold of the truths and books that talk about U.S. history, and you see what they sacrificed, not only the men, but also the women. And many of the women wanted the Founding Fathers to also have women's rights. But, you know, they weren't there yet. That happened in the 1900s. But the more you learn about this stuff, the more you fight for this country, for faith, for your children, and you want to teach your children, and then you breathe the spirit of freedom into them so much that they are inspired to share with others. It's like it gets into their heart, and then once it gets into their heart, nothing on this planet can rip them away from it, and it's wonderful. Because when that happens, no one can tell them otherwise, because they already know the truth.
Oh, very good. I really like what you said about the heart of freedom, and that once that gets instilled in a child, it makes a difference on who they are and how they live their life. Anybody else? Why is it important that we teach this to our children?
Okay, so I kind of think that society probably eventually is just going to crash. That's kind of what I think. I don't know. Will it? I have no idea. But if and when it does, if we teach these things to our children, who's going to rise up and create a government that's going to help it survive it? Right? They need to know. They need to. My mom and I were just talking about this morning. And they need to know the principle. They need to know all the foundational elements of what the founders taught so they can reestablish again. They need to. I don't know. We'll see what happens, I guess.
That's really good.
I think when you can see the hand of God in preserving something, it increases your testimony or your knowledge of Him in your own life. And to see that His hand preserving it tells us how important it is, and that we need to preserve it as well.
So I've had a couple of epiphanies during the conference, and it's just kind of culminated and brought them all together. But I was homeschooled as well. I'm his sister. And a lot of these stories I grew up with all the time, hearing them over and over again. But I've been, you know, off pursuing a career, doing other things for the last 12 years, and coming back to these stories, coming back to this environment of our nation is a unique nation under God. It is special. It's just felt like coming home, and it's felt so right. But the thing I really wanted to share was that by learning these stories, by being taught these stories as a child, we learn that God cares about certain things. He cares about His children. He cares about their freedom and their ability to make choices. And this nation is great because we have the ability to choose what it becomes. There are other nations out there that are, you know, maybe a little easier to live in, where you don't have to be so involved, where it doesn't take so much time, where there's free health care. But the amazing thing about this nation is that we choose what it becomes. We choose where it goes from here. And it's not pretty. It's really scary out there right now. But these men, these women that went through, I mean, the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, it wasn't pretty then either. But by learning their stories, we know that if we keep moving forward, no matter how dark it is, no matter how scary it is, it gets better on the other side, as long as we never stop. If George Washington had given up, if Thomas Jefferson had decided he wasn't a good enough writer to write the Declaration of Independence, if they had given up, we wouldn't have what we have today. And so knowing these stories so that we can rely on their example and just keep moving forward, that's what's going to save our nation.
Very good. I agree with that, and it makes me think of Benjamin Franklin when he signed the Declaration of Independence. And he went up and in front of the entire Congress, he said, you know, I am rather disappointed with our Constitution and what we've come up with. But when you consider all of these individual men who have come together and all of our differences of opinion, and that we were able to come together and that we were able to create something so close to perfection, it is nothing less than a miracle that we have the form of government that we have.
For a long time, people have said that one of the forbidden topics of politics that we just don't talk about at all in our nation is more and more divided politically and crumbling at the seams in a lot of ways. I think as we teach our kids about the founding of America and get into the nitty-gritty of details and stories, really help them internalize it, that it gives them a knowledge basis to be able to have intelligent conversations and debate and communication with others that they are around, and hopefully be able to persuade them to join them in celebrating the cause of freedom and supporting the principle that the country is founded on, instead of just having a strong, uninformed opinion that just tends to add to the divides.
That's a very good point. It's not necessarily easy for a lot of us who weren't raised being taught about the Constitution to be able to teach it to our children, and we can feel very inadequate. But as we will learn about it and then we pass that knowledge on to our children, it allows them to have a different way of speaking about the future of our country and the possibilities that we have as a nation.
So just a kind of a thought I've been having on this is that we kind of think of the early colonists as a very united people. But you got to realize that each colony was actually almost its own nation. The people were not united in their beliefs, in their thoughts. They were very divided in a lot of aspects. But when you think about the founding fathers, there's something that united a nation. In our day and age today, we think, oh, we have so many different beliefs, we're so divided. But what made America great then is they were able to come together on a common cause. And that united a nation of different people. America's been a nation of uniting people of different beliefs and ideas, and that's what's made us great. And that principle has not changed today. We still need to be a united people to be a great nation. And I think there's a lot of lessons to gain from the founding fathers, because that is something they had to achieve in their day and age, is to unite a people of different beliefs and ideas.
Oh, that's really good. The effect that it has on our children, not just in the political realm, but also throughout all areas of their life, if we can teach them and help them to understand that you can find things in common, and you can find a way to build good relationships and to build a positive environment in your life if you understand what happens through through the hand of providence in a personal life. We can get those examples from our history as a country.
So for me, one of the things that I appreciate about these stories and the importance of teaching to our children is that when the founding fathers created this mission, they'd never done this before. It was something that they felt was right, and it was something that was going to be beneficial, and they learned that God would help them. And the miracles, you know, the stories that we see, those same opportunities apply to us. Some of us are first time doing this, others have been doing it for a while. But the family is crucial to the Father's plan. And as we strive to do the best we can, as we strive to seek His guidance and direction, these stories are evidence that God does hear and answer prayers. And we can learn from that, and we can teach our children that. We can teach our children that they can have dreams and a vision, and if they turn to God, that God will help them to create it, and that will help them be successful in their lives. Thank you.
I just want to say, I'm up here handing out this stuff. You guys got kids? These need to be in your packets, so pass them out. They're for the, whatever it is. It's the Mountain Inn. It's the Mountain Inn Retreat. Or not Retreat, but it's the Mountain Inn. And it's on whatever that's happening in the city. He wants to have a bunch of homeschool people here. He got them here, got a bunch of them here last year. He had about 2,000 kids come.
So this is a great segue into the next part that I wanted to talk about. How do we do it? How do we teach this to our children? What resources and things that different people use to be able to help them understand the founding of our country and what we can do with that information?
Well, we are like the founding fathers, I think I put us in their place, and I put our kids, my kids, in the human generation. They're going to be fighting. I do anything they are. This country's falling apart. There won't be any question. I don't doubt it. It's been prophesied. There's a lot of stuff going on now. And I am the oldest person here, probably. And I was born 6 months before the Second World War, before we were bombed. Not before the war was already going on in Europe, but before we were bombed. And to see what has happened all through, so I was born in 41, all through the 40s, you know, and how we came out of that war, going through the 50s, oh my gosh, the 50s, 60s, things changing, 70s, 80s, 90s. It's, and now we're in the 2000s, and I forget that we're in the 2000s, I keep thinking we're in the 90s. This is not the country that I grew up in. This is not the country, and it will not, and it's going to just continue. So you guys are the founding fathers. You're the ones who put this together. They had never done that, right? But you're the father. Kids, one of my dance students. Anyway, and he was, and his grandfather is one of the people that got him going. And his grandpa just passed, but he was a great nature. In the area of Idaho Falls. Anyway, I just want you to know that we're gonna win this thing because we're gonna teach our kids, right? Right.
So my oldest is 21, so I've had a little crash teaching. The Constitution Live is a CE mom or videos that you can purchase, and it teaches all of the Constitution and preamble. And it takes place, a man teaches that standing right, feeling open your right where it all happens. And so we did that course with my kids first semester, where we just watched the videos. And another one is the 5,000 year view, which is I thought, Alex, I want to stand up there. And it's 28 principles of liberty. How can you defend what you don't know what your rights are?
That is really good. I want to recommend a few different books that I have up here. Cameron Taylor was our keynote speaker yesterday, and he wrote these books called 8 Attributes of Great Achievers, Volume 1 and 2. If you want some fun stories about our founding fathers and about great principles to live by, these are fantastic books. And I also wanted to recommend Stacy Murr. She's a new friend of mine. She wrote this book, and it talks about the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And it's amazing because it has a picture on one side that you can show to your kids and some prompts on the other side for you to read to them. And it's a little 5-minute thing that you can do with your kids every single day to help them to understand more about the founding of our country. I'm grateful for all of you helping to share understanding and some insight into why it's important that we incorporate the history of our country into our children's education, and for ideas and suggestions on things that we can use to do that. Because I understand that it can be very overwhelming. One of the comments mentioned that my grandfather was a great patriot, and he was. And when he moved here to Idaho, he saw that on the 4th of July, a lot of people would put an American flag up in front of their house. And he had never seen that before. And it really inspired him to do something to help the younger generation understand what our flag stood for and the principles and the liberty that this country was founded on. And so he and his family designed this flag to help remind people in the community and to be as a banner to show their support for the values that our country was built on. For God, family, faith, peace, and freedom. And he talked about how we can show our love for God when we help teach about freedom through our faith. And then through that understanding of freedom and our faith in God, we can have peace, even when there's peace not in the world. But we can have peace inside of our hearts and inside of our homes through our dedication to and our faith in God. And through that faith and dedication, we will be able to continue to enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy in this country. They are being attacked. The values that we enjoy and the liberty that we are able to enjoy in our religion are being challenged. And we have an opportunity to be able to share what we know with the rising generation and to help prepare them to fight for the good principles and the freedoms and liberty that we currently enjoy. And so when we get done in just a second, I would like to offer that anybody goes back to the booth with all the flags, you can grab one of those flags as well as one of these CDs that has a song in it called The Title of Liberty. And we're gonna wrap up by listening to that song, and then anyone who wants to can grab a flag. And I really appreciate all of your comments and your help today.
Deny. Freedoms are falling. I can hear them.
I love